Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Tales from the Road, Volume 12, Story Number 1. I was running through California one night, State Road 58 to be exact. I started to get sleepy. I pulled out on the side of the road and decided to take a nap. The load I was picking up got rescheduled, and so I decided to just hang out where I was at until it was closer to my normal drive time, which was at night. I was starting to learn how to do astrophotography, and where I was parked was a pretty decent spot. Nice and dark, not a lot of traffic at night, so I decided I would try and practice some shots. I climbed up to the top of my trailer, just above my reefer unit on the edge, and sat there learning how to do aperture settings and all that. All of a sudden, I hear a noise coming from the brush directly below me. I felt pretty safe in the knowledge that no animal was climbing up 13.5 feet to the trailer. I picked up my flashlight and started looking around the ground for the sound, but to my surprise, I found absolutely nothing. So I wrote it off to wind and went back to figuring out camera settings. About 2 minutes later, I heard it again, this time a little bit further down my trailer. So I shined my light out there again, yet again nothing, just brush. By this time, I was starting to get concerned about what I was hearing. The sound I was hearing didn't sound like a small animal, but more like someone moving around below me. The passenger door to my truck was locked, but I left the driver door unlocked. And since I was sitting close to that side of the trailer, I could see if anyone was going to approach it. I turned my light off and got back to what I was doing. About 5 minutes later, I hear someone say, "Hey." My heart jumped into my throat. I grabbed my light, stood up on the trailer, and started frantically looking around the edge of the truck. Not a goddamn thing. Nothing. Same as it was before when I searched around with my light. I remained as quiet as possible, still looking around the brush of my light. Whoever was out there, I didn't want them to hear how panicked I was. It felt like time was standing still in this instance because it was pitch black out and no car or truck had passed me in over an hour. Roughly a minute had gone by and I heard my trailer door handle unlock and release. Now, thankfully, I was empty, so there was no load for anyone to steal, but they didn't open the door. Whoever it was unlocked the trailer door and stopped, as if to draw me to the back of the trailer. I had no time to think about what I was going to do. I snapped out of my panic freeze, jumped down to the catwalk, and hit the ground as fast as possible. I jumped in the truck and locked the door, fired up the truck, and took off as fast as I could. I drove for about 5 minutes, rarely taking my eyes off my side mirror to see if I was being followed. I felt like it was safe enough for me to pull off and close the door of the trailer. At this point, I was trembling because of the pure adrenaline running through me. I stopped that truck as fast as I could, bolted to the back and shut the trailer door and locked it. Got back in the truck and left that area as fast as I could. To this day, I still don't know what the hell this person was doing or what their endgame was. I never stopped on Tehachapi again after that. Gave up trying to learn astrophotography too. Story number 2. This happened to my uncle. He wanted to go to some town for business with a friend. It was urgent work, so my uncle searched desperately for any available cab. It was late evening, so there was scarcely any, and almost all of them were reserved. Finally, he managed to find one. However, when my uncle mentioned the destination, the cab driver straight up refused to go, because the route to that town was said to be bad, as in haunted. On top of that, it was drizzling and visibility was quite bad. Anyway, after much insistence and an offer to pay 3 times the fare, the driver relented. Soon, they were halfway there. The ride was going on well when suddenly the driver pulled up in front of a bridge. My uncle asked the driver what was going on when he asked him to be quiet. A car appeared, its 2 headlights shining through the fog, and it stopped a few meters away. Then the car door opened and the man stepped out and walked to the edge of the bridge. He took out a cigarette and started smoking and stood there by the railing for a few minutes. Then he got back inside the car and then it happened. My uncle and his friend had no idea about what was going to happen. After the man got inside his car, there was a brilliant flash and my uncle had to cover his eyes for what felt like a long time. When he opened them, he saw the car in front of them up in flames. It had been struck by lightning, and they could hear the man inside screaming while being burnt alive. Just as my uncle tried to open the door to help the man out, the driver commanded him to sit still and not move. And he did the same, because the driver seemed to know what he was doing. And then the car rolled along on its own, back down the path it came from, and disappeared from view. After it was over, the driver explained to them that this was a common sighting, and that's why he stopped the car in front of the bridge. The man was on his way somewhere and had pulled up on the bridge to smoke a little, but when he got back in his car, lightning struck and killed him right there and then. He said that what they saw was actually the ghost replaying his death to the spectators. Next story. I will never forget these five particular clients I had while tattooing in southern Arizona. Two truckers and three welders, to tie in two ridiculous-sounding conspiracy theories that I may or may not fully believe. But at least they got me to listen. Starting with the welders, on three separate occasions I tattooed union types who claimed to be on a massive government contract whose sole purpose was welding shackles into cattle cars. I tattooed them for about 6 months and they showed me pictures and video, said that for 10 hours a day they fitted cattle cars with chains and shackles. That was nearly a decade ago. So take it as you will, no one has been rounded up yet. The most fascinating two clients, with the coolest stories though, were these two truckers. Tattooed them every time they were in town. The first, let's call him Jim, and he worked for a government contracted shipping company, and all his work entailed driving cargo into the mountains, driving past military checkpoints, into a circular door cut into the mountain, and dropping the cargo off into a staging area tall enough to park a small skyscraper. Jim said he saw huge tunnels leading off of this chamber and trucks coming and going with cargo, but his clearance let him into the staging area to unload and then leave, no more. So needless to say, I was skeptical, like, yeah, I work for the alphabet soup and know all about some of the mountain retreats and missile silos, but really, underground highways, staging areas you can walk a mecca through, quit pulling my chain. That was about 2 or 3 months later when I met Bill. Bill said he was a trucker, and when I asked what he carried, he said, all the secret cargo. I asked him, so like all the covered stuff you see on the highway? And his reply was just, no, the stuff's too dangerous or off the books that you never see it on the highway. Since the thoughts of Jim's stories were still in my mind, I asked if he meant the underground highway, and Bill lit up like crazy, like he was tired of having his work discounted. He went up for the entire session about the crazy weapons and biohazard shit he hauled around on the Great American Underground Highway. These were his words. As Bill explained it and corroborated Jim's story, the underground drivers are different from the above ground so as to maintain separation and levels of secrecy. All the doors are guarded by black op types, and the scale is simply off the charts. He said that the entire nation was connected underground via these tunnels, but only near major cities are there access points, and those were usually hidden in the mountains. Just thousands of miles of giant tunnels, deep underground, being driven solely by government contract truckers hauling ultra-sensitive gear. I don't know how true these stories are because I have never seen them, nor can I provide any proof. But two strangers sharing a similar story definitely makes you stop and pause. Next story. My grandpa was in the Teamsters Union for over 30 years. Teamsters is a driving trucking labor union based on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. He was a great trucker. In fact, he only had one minor accident in his 30-plus years of trucking. He was coming back from a long haul and was on Highway 55 in New Jersey, which is known as the most dangerous highway in New Jersey. Another thing most locals know about 55 is that a large amount of Native American artifacts were dug up and found during the highway's construction and repairs. Well, back to the story. Gramps was 30 minutes from home, and it was dark out. He was later in his trucking career and had already had 20 years or so under his belt, and again, not a single accident. Out of nowhere, anywhere from 3 to 5 human silhouettes dart out from the left side of the highway to the right. Grandpa was understandably startled and swerved his rig to the left, whereas the figures had made it to the right already. He scraped the cabin trailer against the guardrail and braked as hard as he could. His eyes darted to the rearview mirror to see the last of the figures duck into the tree line. He waited there for 10 minutes, just replaying what had happened in his head, even though the whole ordeal was over in 5 seconds. He never got a good look at the group for obvious reasons, but said they ran with what looked like canes in their hands and were wearing rags. He's from Philly and moved to southern Jersey after he married my grandma. So yeah, he is a Philly boy, big time. Of course, he knows natives existed, but never of the kind on the east, just the ones that hunt buffalo in Clint Eastwood movies. It's pretty obvious the canes were either spears or bows, and the rags the figures wore were animal hides or crude cloth. When he returned home, he was still shaken and never talked with his wife, my grandma, at first. He only opened up about what happened with his trucking buddies, until one of them recommended he should indeed tell his wife about the situation. Next story. I work in the bush a lot, running a tow tractor for the rigs in the bush of Alberta. And one night, on this one hill, which I refuse to go back to till this day, one night I was sitting in my truck as usual, listening to the radio, and I had a truck to pull up. So I go down, get the truck to pull him up the hill. As the light gets pointed up the hill, this cat-looking thing starts walking across the road. No big deal. It'll move, right? No, it didn't. We ended up stopping just before the top, then it stands up and puts its hands on the blade. High-lift Degman blades. So it's about 6 feet to the top of the blade from the ground. As I looked this thing over, it looked human, almost like it had black eyes on a flat face. Looked like it was wearing a cougar skin. Then, about 5 minutes later, just walked off into the bush. It didn't make a noise or leave any tracks. Me and that trucker went to the rig to unhook. I stayed at the rig that night and never went for my truck till the next morning. Whatever it was, I still don't know. My cross shifts show up around 6:30 a.m., and I told him the story, and he was saying that on his way in he'd seen something walking down the road that looked like a cougar but didn't leave any tracks. Fast forward about 2 years later, I find out that there's a native gravesite about 5 kilometers from where we were working. There were other things that happened, but that was as close as I came to whatever was out there. Next story. Cody, Wyoming, midnight. I had just finished a very long day at work. I'm a medical courier and I'm regularly on the road, staying in hotels, and life is never dull. This particular evening, I wound up on a 500-mile drive that ended in Cody, Wyoming, at around midnight. It had been cold. It was December, after all, and this is Wyoming. The roads had been very so-so that night. They weren't clear, but they weren't treacherous. It was one of those drives in the dark where you're on edge the whole time. Staying alert for 500 miles in the dark on roads that were nearly abandoned at this time of night, with light snow and heavy winds, it takes a lot out of a person. This particular week, it had been very busy. I had been in 4 states that week by the time I reached Wyoming that evening. The drive to the patient's house was up a windy, slick road, and the drive was uneventful. After I had dropped the medicine off to them and called the boss to let them know I had made it and was heading to a hotel to get some sleep. Pretty usual conversation. We talked briefly about how much they would reimburse me for the hotel room. They always say $80 to $100, and it's pretty typical. And fair, since the cheap hotel in Cody, Wyoming, is about that price. However, I'm 31, and a good night's rest, a good free breakfast, and a nice AM soak in the hot tub are requirements for when I catch myself in a hotel room. I know that by the time I get to the hotel, I have to put on a serious smile, so I treat myself. One, because if I'm staying in a hotel, it has been a profitable day, and I can afford to treat myself just a little. And two, I feel better after a good night's rest, a great breakfast, and a nice soak. I will not name the chain of hotels I stay at, but I frequent one chain because it's the best valued hotel in my hometown, which is back in Nebraska. Tonight, I pulled into the hotel, which I've stayed there 3 or 4 times now, so I'm familiar with the place. I'd called ahead about 8 hours before, when I was leaving Denver, to call and book a room and let them know they could be expecting me around midnight. I walked into the hotel with my bag, dusted off the snow that had fallen on me while I got my stuff out of the car and walked inside. It's very quiet. There's no music, and the TV isn't on in the lobby. I wandered to the counter, leaving a trail of wet shoe prints behind me, coming in from the snow and into the lobby, and my shoes are squeaking as I approach the counter. When I get to the counter, there's no one there. There's a bowl of ice cream with a brownie from the restaurant connected to the hotel. The local papers are open to the comics page, and the Sudoku is half filled out with a pen sitting there. Hanging on the back of the chair is a small lady's coat with fake fur fringe around the hood. On the floor next to the chair, a pair of smaller pink and black Nikes and a black purse. I figure that she, by the assumption of the coat, shoes, and purse, is in the bathroom, so I stand at the counter quietly waiting for her to return. I fiddle with my wallet, getting out my card to pay for it and my ID. I scroll through on my phone and hook to the free Wi-Fi. 5 minutes go by, then 10. At 15 minutes, the phone starts ringing. I still had no idea where she was, and I had begun to get irritated. It had been a long day, and I wanted to get rested before I got up and drove home in the morning. After the phone stopped ringing, I started to get frustrated. I began to wander around the lobby and behind the counter shouting, "Hello? Is anyone here?" as loudly as possible. The area behind the counter is an employee-only area. I ventured back behind the counter where a hallway leads to the back of the house area connected to the offices, staff elevator, bathrooms, laundry, and the restaurant. I ventured down the hallway shouting, "Hello?" Still no one answers. It's now 12:30 a.m. As I return to the counter and begin looking for a posted phone number for a manager or someone in authority, the phone rings, the cordless phone still laying next to the paper she'd opened. Frustrated and exhausted, I answered the phone, hoping it's someone who could tell me where the woman who is supposed to check me in is at. It's not. It's another guest, who I tried calling earlier for a wake-up call in the morning. I explain to the gentleman on the phone my situation and how I cannot help him. He states he's coming to the lobby to help me look for the girl at the counter. I had not found a number to call. 5 minutes go by and this strange older man with odd glasses and long, unkempt hair comes into the lobby from the first floor hallway. At this point, I had been behind the counter and had been shouting to the point I feared I might wake up other guests. I had wandered through the back area, the lobby, and the front part of the restaurant, all the while shouting, and no one responded. This guy had given me the creeps, and I was exhausted but on high alert. There was an employee missing, and a creepy guy who just happened to appear in the same time she's missing. Feeling nervous about this gentleman, I stay prepared for any strange behavior and keep myself at least arm's distance from him the entire time. I explain where I've looked, that I've yelled. At this point, I begin to go through what I call worst-case scenario preparation. This guy could easily overpower a small woman. I may be standing here with a crazy person. I keep my space and my back towards the main entry just in case. I'm a grown man, just under 6 feet. I've had self-defense courses, and I had a concealed carry weapons permit after encountering a bear at a patient's house in the fall. I have no reason to believe I'm in immediate trouble, but this guy just gives me the creeps. It's at this point I debate calling the cops. It's now 12:45 a.m. The gentleman tells me maybe she's in the bathroom, which I respond to that I had thought that myself, but had walked by and yelled loudly when I walked through the back and no one responded. He insists we check the bathrooms. My red flag goes off, and I put another foot or two of space between us as I let him lead us down the hallway to the employee bathroom. My heart and mind are racing at this point. Did this dude kill her, and now he's going to try to kill me? I start to worry about my safety as we go down a hallway that leads to a small room and with one that exits in and out. We reach the bathroom. He knocks and announces himself, then opens the door. The bathroom is empty. We checked a few more rooms and the elevator and found nothing. We venture back to the lobby, where I stand behind the counter looking for any phone number that could be a manager or supervisor. After about 10 minutes, I find a number and someone answers. It's now 12:55 a.m. The half-asleep voice on the other end of the phone is the maintenance woman for the hotel. Confused as to who I am and why I'm calling, I explain the situation as the creepy man stands on the other side of the counter, staring at me in a dead, cold manner. The maintenance woman says she'll be there in 10 minutes or so. I hang up the phone. I walked around the counter, still confused, looking at her stuff there, as if she just vanished. It's at this point I decide to wander towards the lobby seating for the restaurant. Once in the doorway, I turn the corner, and down at the end of the booth, there are a pair of legs hanging out of the booth. I had walked within 15 feet of there while checking around before the creepy guy showed up. I see her legs hanging and instantly the pit of my stomach turns sour and a sense of dread comes over me. Suddenly, the creepy guy walks right up by me. Thinking the worst, I take a few quick steps away from him and down the row of booths in the dark restaurant. With him at the other end, I look in the booth where she's laying. She's maybe 20 and very pretty. I shake her foot. She doesn't respond. I shake again, saying, "Hey!" Nothing. It's at this moment the creepy guy starts down the booth that I finally feel I may need to defend myself. I kneel down to draw from my ankle holster as he quickly comes down the rope booths, and it's at this exact moment the girl wakes up and accidentally kicks me in the chest, knocking me gently on my ass and stopping Mr. Creepy in his tracks, also stopping me from drawing a weapon. She had been asleep. Mr. Creepy was just a guest. Moment later, the maintenance woman arrived, and by 1:15 a.m., I was in my room trying to decompress. Hotel clerks wanders off late at night. She's found alive and safe, but not after I prepare myself to find her dead and almost draw a weapon on a creepy guy. Next story. My dad told me this story a few times because he tells it so well. On the reservation, there were only a few street lights in the late 80s. No glowy twilight from the city, so it was lit by starlight. Patrolmen are part of a small group responsible for multiple districts in southern Arizona, so sometimes they would have partners, sometimes they spent their shift by themselves, and sometimes they could meet up if it was a particularly quiet night. These districts were pretty far from each other, so what you think of as neighborhoods often are a few roads with houses very far apart, which give lots of room in the dark for trouble. Patrolmen are responsible for cruising the back roads, listening to the radio, and would break up parties and look for suspicious individuals, look for fires, etc. My dad was driving back roads and came upon a trailer that was lit up and looked like a bunch of people were inside. He drove by and made sure no one was causing trouble, noting maybe 15 people max could fit inside, and drove on. Around the curve, he said he had his headlights on and could see a car up ahead, facing him with the headlights off. Sometimes cars were abandoned and patrolmen would have to check license plates and see that it was empty, as in no bodies. Arizona is a one-plate state, meaning the law doesn't require a front license plate. As my dad approached, maybe 25 feet, he says he couldn't see into the car even though with headlights shining, but definitely saw bright white hands on the steering wheel, almost as if someone was wearing white gloves. Here's how he told it. They looked like magician's hands were gripping the steering wheel. As I came within 10 feet of the car, I saw the fingers flicker as if whoever that was there knew I was trying to see them. I slowed down. I passed within 4 feet of the car, and when I look into the driver's side, I see the shape of a head looking straight forward. As I'm right beside the car, the driver's side to driver's side, in a flash, the shape turned its head and smiled. An ungodly wide smile, bright as starlight, and as large as a watermelon slice. Its skin was stretched back around its tall white teeth. It kind of reminded me of the mask. You know, the one in the movie? My dad snapped his head forward and drove a wide circle around the car to see the license plate, and there was none. On the passenger side, the back door was broken off, and shone his light inside to make sure there was no one else in the back seat. He no longer saw the person inside. He took a description of the car and as quickly as possible returned in the direction it came from. He watched the rearview mirror, hoping whoever that was would not chase him, even though in retrospect, he assumes the car was not functional, which makes it creepier. Who sits in a broken-down car in the middle of the night? They couldn't have known he was on his way and couldn't have planned on scaring him the way they did. It did. He said he was returning to familiar ground and saw the trailer up ahead, dead quiet and dark. He was able to shake it off until he saw that the trailer was boarded up, windows broken, and looked abandoned for years. He radioed my uncle to see where he was, and always the older brother wanted to go check it out for himself. And my dad begged, please just wait until the morning. I'll go with you. My uncle confirmed it was an empty, boarded-up trailer, and an abandoned, empty car that looked rusted and busted, and always calls my dad silly names when I ask them to tell me that story. Next story. Well, my dad used to drive trucks in Mexico, and he would tell me basic stuff that he used to do, like making sure the load was secure, carrying the bribe money, $1,500, and trying to cover up as much ground as possible before having to stop. One day he told me how on some nights he would get interference on the radio, usually when he's driving through a town and hear the police chatter, other trucker stations or radio stations, but on certain points where it's pure mountains or desert, he would get interference of voices, either saying random things or hear what sounds like praying. One of the more creepier voices that stuck to him was that he was passing through Durango one night and hearing another trucker saying an accident was on one of the roadways and to avoid it, but it was too late for him to get on another highway, so he had to go through it, and as he was passing through the accident, which was really bad, but the fire was contained. The moment he was passing the charred-up car, He hears static from his radio and the voice of a woman crying, saying, "Why did it happen to her?" over and over. And after 5 miles, the voice left, and he went back to the open channel. Next story. I used to work at a factory job at Sandwich Foods in Ohio. My shift started at 4 a.m., and my commute was 45 minutes long. I took back roads after one too many near-death experiences on the highway. One leg of my drive went through an open field for about a mile between the suburb and less than fancy houses. Just before the field, there's a four-way stop sign, which is illuminated by a single light post. One morning, I'm at the said stop when I notice a pair of eyes just ahead of me at the side of the road. I assumed it was a deer. I usually saw several forest puppies on my drive-in, and I decided to wait for this one to pass. Better to be patient than to have a spooked deer total your car. So I'm looking at the eyes, which reflected via the street light, and I noticed that they're looking back at me. Not just at my car, but at me. This struck me as a bit odd as we studied one another. I felt an intelligence in those eyes as if it understood exactly what I was and knew better than to get hit by my car. It was a bit unnerving, but then I guessed the thing made up its mind that it didn't want to wait any longer, and it stood up. I myself am 6'2", and this thing easily dwarfed me. It rose up from beside the road and loped across the street. It was outside the cone of light from the street light, but I still got a hazy impression of its shape. The thing had massive forearms that reached out with long fingers when it walked. It was shaggy, and I got the impression of a long snout or muzzle. The way the thing walked was ape-like, but with its outstretched front limbs. The closest thing I can compare it to is the way the werewolves run in Skyrim. I couldn't breathe or think for a second. Then I snapped out of my fear and turned on my high beams, but the creature was long gone. I tore down that street and pushed my engine as fast as it could go. I worked that job for 2 more months, but I never saw the thing again. And even now, I still don't know what to make of it. Next story. My dad was a truck driver in the 80s and 90s, among other things. He had just finished a trip and decided he and I were going to go somewhere. I don't remember where we were headed. It had started to snow really hard. It was dark outside. Visibility was shit. I was probably 15 or 16 at this time. My dad wanted to get some coffee, so he pulled into a place and said he'd be right back. He was gone about 2 minutes, and the back driver's side door of the car opened, and a woman hopped in. We stared at each other for a long moment, and she said to me, "The big man said I could ride with y'all. You got his eyes." Okay. About 2 minutes later, my dad came out, got in the car, started complaining about the price of coffee, and then just screamed and rattled off all the profanity he knew, which was a lot, as he saw the woman in the car. Without a word, she got out of the car and walked off into the snowstorm. So yeah, she just decided she was going to hop into a random car. Next story. This is something that happened when I was driving with my wife. We had taken a shortcut back on highway to College Station from Waco, Texas, and this was about 2 a.m. in the morning. My ex's mother was in the hospital and needed help. This happened to me and my ex not long after I had my oldest, when we were driving down the dead stretch of a back highway in pitch black, and we saw a woman ahead start waving her hands and running in front of us back and forth on the highway in a nightgown as we approached her. I told my ex not to stop, but we would go back 2 miles and call the cops from a payphone. We assumed, as there was a closed gas station 2 miles back. This is pre-cell phone days. I told my then wife that I wasn't putting my newborn's life nor ours in danger. We hooked a U-turn before we got too close, only to go another 1 mile back, and it looked like the same lady on the same side of the road as us, again waving her hands and running in and out of the road. We called 911, and they said to try and take an alternate route or speed through. The operator said they had calls from that area for years, and nobody ever found anything wrong when the police would arrive. Don't know if this was supernatural or someone trying to make a stop to ambush us in this area. Would also like to add, this was in an area where there wasn't even a tiny town for at least 30 miles both ways. There was a prison near, however. Next story. I drive a tow truck, and one time I pulled into a really secluded rest area looking for somebody who called me needing a jump start. He said he was in an Altima, so I pull up, it's pitch black, and I see just a Nissan Altima sitting there, nobody else. So I hop out and start walking up to the vehicle. Looking with my flashlight, nobody's in the driver's seat, but I do see a pair of legs in the passenger seat. legs with fishnet stockings on. I slowly walked up to the window and leaned down, shining my light up to see an older, probably 60-ish man sitting there in women's underwear and fishnet stockings. He's just staring at me, terrified. I turn my light off, get in my truck, and drive through the rest stop to see the Ultima that needed a jump start about 100 yards up. Very creepy and very weird. He was sitting out there all by himself in the passenger seat with the vehicle off. No lights, no AC, nobody around for literally miles. Who knows what he was doing? This rest stop didn't even have restrooms. It was just a place to pull off the interstate and rest. Just plain crazy. Next story. I'd like to accompany my stepfather from time to time. This is one time we were on this curvy road of just trees, not a house, not even fences on the land behind the trees. As the hours passed, I started seeing a man. White rubber boots, which were dirty, a vertically striped light blue button shirt, a blue cap, a cloth bag hang from his right shoulder, and a long-ass machete hanging from his dusty jeans. I don't know why I remember him so clearly. For some reason, as we got closer and closer, he was just the same distance. I said, "Hey, we should offer him a ride. It's an empty road far from any town." My stepdad looks over and says, "Who?" "There's no other than you and me," I said. "There, look over there in front. The man with the light blue shirt." This kept on for a few minutes back and forth until the man just disappeared. I said to myself, "Oh good, probably just my imagination," until blood spots started appearing on the road. I decided not to tell my stepdad because I thought probably it was just an animal which got hurt, or my imagination playing with my boredom, but it never ended. And what made it worse is that when I asked to stop for a second to take a piss, the man appeared again. Only difference was it was on the opposite direction. I said to myself, "Oh, for God's sake, not you again." I decided to not pay any attention to it and just carried on with my business. When I finished, the man was running towards me and kept getting closer and closer. I got scared and jumped hastily back inside the truck and told my stepdad to start moving because the man was coming. He laughed and told me I was crazy and that there's nobody. The blood stopped a few kilometers away and it never came to my mind after that, until my mom told me about seeing the same man and the same blood trail on a similar road. This was a few years back, it was October, and I decided to do a cross-country trip from Georgia to Alaska with my dog. I was driving a pickup truck, and I was moving for work and decided the best way to get there was to have a fun, money-saving experience and bounce from national park and koa campsites and tent camp on my way to Alaska. So I sold most of my stuff and took about 2 weeks to drive around the country on my way north. On about my fifth or sixth night on the road, I stopped in Oregon at a little campsite I'd found while I was Googling cool place to stay back in Georgia. It's a beautiful campsite, back upright to a nice little creek and only about a 20-minute drive from the highway. Plus, we had it all to ourselves. It gets a little chilly in October, but I expected to see at least one other person. There's still time for other campers to show as I'd gotten into the camp a little earlier than expected. So my dog and I walked around for a little bit before I set up my tent and cooked some dinner. Well, it's still only midday, so I figure I'll drive to a gas station and fill my truck up before I set up camp and make dinner, get cozy in a tent. That way, when we get up to leave in the morning, I don't have to stop and we can get right on the road. Now, I'm faced with a choice. I can head back the 20 minutes to the highway, get off on one of the next exits and get gas, or I can go deeper down this side road into eastern Oregon backcountry, looking for a gas station. Well, I'm a bit of an adventurer, so the choice was obvious. I sat down this back road for about another 15 minutes and drive, not a business or home in sight, and eventually get to a run-down wooden building with the old-style gas pump out front. Perfect. So I pull into the dirt parking lot and crack a window for my dog, and then I get out and walk towards the building. As I'm approaching the building, I remember thinking it was strange that this tiny old wooden building had weird-looking black splotchy door, but I didn't think much of it until I got closer. I reached out to open the handle and froze. The door is not painted black. It's covered in flies, thousands of flies crawling underneath the door jamb and buzzing around the frame, obviously trying to get inside. At the same instant, I hear a very clear and distinct two-finger whistle like you would do to get someone's attention. I turn around and in between me and my truck is an older man wearing flannel and work pants on a four-wheeler with a small dog sitting on his lap. He sternly asks me, "What you doing here?" and I explain very quickly I just came this way to buy some gas. He lets me know they're closed and suggests that I go back to my truck and go home. So I slowly walk past him and this tiny dog, who I now realize is missing an eye, and get into my truck and pull out of the parking lot. He sits in that spot on the four-wheeler and watches me until we finally lose sight of him in the rear view. I drove straight past the site I had previously selected to camp only 15 minutes up the road, and I hit the highway. After stopping for gas, I camped on the Washington border that night. Even if it was a misunderstanding, creepy as shit. Also, some of the most fun 2 weeks in my life. So, what can I say?